across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Joined as well on this Tuesday morning by Greg Buck in Waukesha, Brittany Merlot in the Wausau area, tracking a very busy overnight hours, early morning hours of thunderstorm activities rolling through the area that we'll jump into in just a moment, just long enough to say first off to Tony, thank you very much for the welcome back, throwing his whole day off, not having me on yesterday. Well, that makes one of you out there, so thank you for that. And from Rob, good morning from Tigerton, cloudy and 66. The storms hit Tigerton at 2:15 a.m., 70-mile-an-hour wind gusts, quarter-size hail, inch and a quarter of rain, power outages in the Wittenberg, Burnham Wood, and Bowler areas of western Shawano County and eastern Marathon County. Again, Brittany was on the money with the storms.
Woohoo!
So there, you got that going for you, which is nice.
I was surprised. You know, a lot of these systems keep going south from our forecast, but not this one. Mm-hmm. This definitely did strike the Wausau area, moved over towards the Fox Valley. There was a tornado warning in Shawano in the overnight hours. But of course, I'm not seeing any damage reports, thankfully. I mean, that is statewide. I am shocked that nothing too bad happened. But some small hail was reported. Of course, there is a flood warning right now into Northern Price, I think Ashland, Sawyer, and also Washburn counties, as you guys got about 3 inches of rainfall. So a lot of those rivers are still rising. For example, the Yellow River, that one is going to be hitting some major flood within the next 24 hours. Also, the Mississippi at La Crosse over the next 2 days is looking to rise. That could be hitting some moderate flood stages by late tomorrow. And we're also looking at the Red Wing River. I don't know if you heard earlier yesterday in Minnesota, a dam failed. The river just started rushing through. Some scary stuff after all of this rain.
It is ridiculous looking. I mean, this dam in Blue Earth, Minnesota has the water just basically going all around it so that it, I mean, it has failed, but it's still there, but it's not doing you any good really.
Nope.
And you're just looking at this going, yeah, no bueno. That's dams are... That's not really how it's supposed to work.
Really,
could you imagine being in the downflow?
Really, no. At all?
What's that, Greg?
We're not going to make a damn joke at all here. No pun, no nothing, no play on words.
No. This is weird. This is the kind of weird thing you don't want to see happen on that or any other dam for that matter. So where do we go? Where do we go from here? Weather-wise.
All right. So we've got a high pressure system now taking over. That cold front has moved out of the state. The last lingering showers are down there into like Kenosha, Racine area. That's kicking out of here. We'll have a beautiful day. Highs today will be hot, though. We are going to be hitting near 90 the further south you live, mid 80s up further north in the state. And we do have some chances of some spotty showers and storms again later tonight through the overnight into early tomorrow morning. But mainly south of Highway 29. That's the southern half of the state thing. And none of those look strong to severe. So just a little bit of extra rain. Nothing like we saw last night. 1 to 3 inches. Ugh.
Yeah, it was especially noteworthy. But we have to have that because today is basically the first day of spring. As you know, Brittany, being your meteorologist, that last night with Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals being done,
right?
And Florida beating Edmonton 2-1, the hockey season's over. The Celtics, you know, won the NBA title a little over a week ago. So the winter sports are done. So first day of spring, right?
Something like that? Yeah, yeah, I think so. You got me there.
yeah. As we head into 90s and a couple of days into summer, maybe the point I'm making is these seasons run too damn long now.
They do. There's the damn joke.
There it is, Greg.
Thank you.
We got it for you. Thanks, Brittany. Have a great day.
You too.
Good to see you today. We're expecting Hans Breitmoser in a little while here. We will be talking about what's known and what's still not known about the increased incidence of bird flu being found in dairy cattle. None in Wisconsin confirmed so far, but still concerning for those who worry about, you know, the rare but no longer zero number of transmissions to people and what can happen as these viruses mutate. We seem to have learned a thing or two about not taking these things for granted over the past 4 years or so. Again, thanks to Todd for pinch hitting yesterday. For folks that missed it in the last hour, I ended up having a long weekend, or a mini vacation, as in Minnie and Mickey, and getting to get a feel for the Orlando tourist traps. This time as a grandparent instead of as a parent. We took our daughters to Disney World for the first time when they were 4 and 6, and it was absolutely delightful to see, you know, the joy that they experienced in meeting the characters and everything. Since that time, of course, they've built Universal Studios down there. And when we went, you know, some years later, and our younger daughter was, you know, such a huge Harry Potter fan of the books. This was before the movies came out. Could not wait to just, she just tore into those books and read them in record time, it felt like. And so to go there, be able to get a magic wand and to see the fire-breathing dragon and the rides and everything, you know, that was particularly cool. Well, now she's got two kids of her own. And for Grandma and Grandpa to get to tag along, because there was a work conference in Orlando, so hey, why don't you help and watch the kids for a little bit? Oh, okay, we'll take them to the happiest place on earth. And Greg, one of them, you mentioned we're going to start doing coffee cup Fridays, and you know, one of the kids particularly likes SpongeBob, and so there's the new SpongeBob personalized mug with Patrick on it. Not Patrick, my name. Let me turn it around here. Patrick Starfish for Universal Studios. So
I'm a little, I wanted to be like, hey, why are you doing this now? Wait until Friday. But that's too cute to be upset about.
I couldn't wait. This will be Coffee Cup Friday. Will be the new SpongeBob mug that says Patrick on it. It was really the only trinket I had time to get. It turns out that when you got a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old, you're not going to spend a lot of time in gift shops. So there may have been things I wanted to get, but nope, we got to get to that next ride. Got to go.
Well, yeah, especially when they take the ride and it gets you right through the gift shop at the very end. Like, welcome. You had a great time. Now enjoy $200 shirts.
And at some point, yes, the 5-year-old did get a something related to Toy Story after coming out of one of the Toy Story rides. So nobody gets out unscathed from these things. But even the 2-year-old, there was what's called at the Disney Hollywood Studios, there was a Disney Junior dance party. And so a couple of the costume characters came out. There was, you know, Timon from The Lion King and Doc McStuffins and one or two others. And then, of course, Mickey comes out and does some dancing. And all of these, not just our, you know, not just our 2-year-old granddaughter, but all these little 2, 3, 4, 5-year-olds, rock star, absolute rock. Mickey Mouse is out there and he wants you to dance. The video's never not going to be wonderful watching them jump and go crazy for Mickey.
When we went back in 2012, you know, that was like, I think being an adult and, you know, the first two times I went, I was very little, being cognizant of how much, and this speaks to their training and their wanting to work there, but the employees and everyone just being so excited that you are there, making you feel so welcome, like you're the only person in that park. And the kids go up there, and the princesses and the characters, they're just so thrilled to see them. I mean, you could be cynical about it and be like, well, it's their job. It's their job, but they pull it off really well. And when I was 4 years old, it's one of my earliest memories going to Disney. I remember telling my mom, I want to see Mickey. And she goes, look over there. And as I say that, Mickey comes out of this door, and I lose my mind.
Yep. It happens, because I mean, those are your rock stars. So of course my daughter took her kids to a character breakfast, and you know, again, the video of this, their mouths are just agape, like, oh my gosh, there's Donald Duck. You know, he's walking right through the same restaurant. It's so cool.
He loves and pancakes.
We get to do that with our daughters, you know, 30 years ago. And when they talk about it being the happiest place on earth, the big part of it is that everybody wants to be there. Everybody, all the visitors. So everybody's happy. Everybody's upbeat. Like, we have planned this vacation. We all want to be here. The workers, the cast members, as they call them there, you know, they, you know, that's their paycheck. They took that. They want to play these happy roles. So that, honestly, it's so incongruous when at one of the gates, some guy, you know, didn't have the right pass or I forget what, and the ticket agent is trying so nicely to say that, you know, this isn't the one you want. You need this instead. And like, oh, well, I need to speak to your manager. And it's just so weird. Like you're pulling a Karen, you know, about, I want to see your manager. This is the happiest place on earth. Just go get the right ticket, dude.
I want to talk to Walt Disney. Well, sir,
bring me
bad news.
Bring me the head. Bring me the head of Walt. I want to talk to the frozen head of Walt Disney. By the way, that's the happiest place on earth. The not happiest place on earth, of course, would be airlines these days. And I have nothing bad to say about Sun Country. We flew them out and back, but we had to wait 20 plus minutes to get into our gate at Twin Cities International late yesterday. And for folks that thought, oh, you know, the plane's going to land in a few minutes, I can hold off on going to the bathroom. A lot of unhappy people in that plane waiting for that gate. And I really have to, again, tip my cap to not just the folks at Disney or Universal Studios, but airlines, anybody that has to put up with people who are, I mean, grouchy would be an improvement on how some of them are. And don't get me wrong, we've all been in bad situations, but customer service, man, God bless every one of you.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, especially those like, which can be, you know, 0 to 100 on the attitude scale. Mm-hmm. I try to keep quiet. I keep my head down, keep my earphones in. I don't get up quick. When the plane lands, I wait until it's my turn. I just stay as unnoticeable as possible on a plane.
Yeah. Hey, I didn't ask you for this. And I haven't looked at in the library here. So I don't know if we have the radio call from the Reese Hoskins Grand Slam from last night's game. But I liked your call, the little note that you sent me that essentially Reese Hoskins steps to the plate last night as if to say, enough of this, and hits a 399-foot Grand Slam to put the Brewers ahead for good. The Brewers beat Texas 6-3 yesterday. Freddie Peralta worked 5 innings, struck out 6, allowed 2 runs on 4 hits and 2 walks. Bryce Wilson will take the mound this evening in Game 2 of the series at American Family Field. First pitch will be at 7:10. Pre-game starting at 6:35 on Civic Media Stations in Richland Center, Racine, Kenosha, Oshkosh, and Park Falls. We'll unpack some of the day's news, and then we'll look to talk to Hans Breitenmoser, all coming up next, here live from Lake Wissota, on the Civic Media Radio Network. This is Up North News Radio. from the text line, endless sports, yuck! Oh, come on.
So boring.
I'm Pat Kreitlow. Be right back. I actually don't know much about the band Cake, but I know this song, and I like it very, very much. John McRae is 60 years old today. From Tony and Hayward up on Facebook, a Grand Slam is one of the best things in all of sports. Yes, no denying it. Here's the call from Reese Hoskins last night. At least once he steps to the plate, he's knocking the
loading.
Dirt off his cleats.
Now it's playing a commercial. I hate technology.
Everything's got to be a pre-roll. Everything. So while we wait for the ad to end, Reese Hoskins steps to the plate. Brewers are down 3-1. Bases are loaded. Playing the defending world champion Texas Rangers at American Family Field.
Nobody out.
I love a good Grand Slam.
Just amazing.
It was. Yeah. Absolutely. All right, let's check on some of the headlines here. What did I miss yesterday while I was away getting back into town? Well, the big thing, of course, was the 2-year anniversary of the Dobbs decision, which was, I'm not going to say anticlimactic, but again, the decision had been leaked. And everybody has their own theories because nobody ever proved who did it. I choose to sympathize with those who say it had something to do with Justice Alito, who is the most political beast on the court, who wanted to basically, you know, test the waters, take the temperature. But, it, you know, it also could have been folks from the left side as well. But people thought, oh, is this really going to happen? Is this really going to happen? And then it did. 2 years ago today, this Supreme Court revoking a constitutionally protected right to privacy as identified by a prior U.S. Supreme Court 49 years earlier. Since that time, in election after election after election, especially whether it's special elections to Congress or statewide votes to restore or protect women's reproductive health rights, the people have spoken and said that what this court did in the Dobbs decision was wrong. And that now, like it or not, there's going to be this generation-long battle to restore women's rights that should have been protected, should be codified into law. And so it will play a role. It's played a role in past elections. It's going to play a role in this and every future election until it's restored. And there's really no two ways about it, because they will be restored. This country is simply not going to allow itself to slide into a theocracy where one particular religious view of controlling women and their bodies will be allowed to take root. But until then, it's going to be up to voters to turn out every single time. And that's going to include several races for legislature here in the state of Wisconsin. For example, you've got in the new 8th State Senate District, you've got Democrat Jody Habersh-Sinikin taking on Republican Dewey Strobel, who voted against repealing the 1849 ban that was in statutes shortly after Wisconsin became a state. Dewey Strobel voted in favor of a 14-week abortion ban. But here to me is the one that is most egregious. Dewey Strobel was the only no vote when the Senate, on a vote of 32-1, voted to extend postpartum Medicaid coverage for new moms and babies. Currently, that health care coverage for new moms runs for 60 days. There are now only 3 states at 60 days. The other 47 have taken advantage of a federal funding to have coverage for new moms for 1 year after birth. But it's still not the law in Wisconsin. Not just because Dewey Strobel was the only one to vote against it in the Senate, but because despite having enough co-sponsors in the Assembly to pass, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss would not allow it to come up for a vote. So two middle-aged rich white guys, Dewey Strobel and Robin Voss, said, nope, we know what's best for women. And what's best for women is that they not have the security of health insurance coverage for their moms and babies. We'd rather see a 14-week abortion ban. We'd rather see this 1849 statute seen as an abortion ban. And they, of course, celebrated the Dobbs decision. So when Jody Habersh-Sinikin runs against Dewey Strobel in the 8th Senate District, she's got some things to talk about that are going to resonate with voters. Same goes for the 14th State Senate District, now represented by Republican Joan Baldwin, who has said that, quote, I believe life begins at conception, and that even if it is started in a terrible way, that's still life. If a woman is raped and it results in a pregnancy, that person who raped her was terrible, but she wasn't. Well, maybe she, the rape victim, wasn't terrible, but according to Joan Baldwin, she also doesn't deserve the right to make her own choices about what to do with her body. Baldwin has co-sponsored a fetal personhood amendment that would grant embryos the same rights as people, basically outlawing all abortion care and threatening IVF, in vitro fertilization treatments. She's being challenged by Sarah Kiesky, the Democratic candidate in the 14th Senate District, and a rural mental health care provider who said that reproductive rights are an important issue to her and will definitely be part of the campaign in this district that now includes the seat north of Madison, parts of Dane, Richland, Columbia, Sauk, Juneau counties. Out in western Wisconsin, you have the new 30th Assembly District, represented for quite some time now by Republican Shannon Zimmerman. He is being opposed by Allison Page, Democratic candidate who is a nurse, hospital administrator, and CEO of Western Wisconsin Health. That new district covers parts of western Wisconsin in the River Falls area. Allison Page has talked about her own health issues in a 1982 pregnancy that necessitated abortion care, a deeply personal issue for someone who had three children at the time and who told the Wisconsin Examiner, "We should not be going back to a world where someone else feels like they should get to judge a woman's decision. That's not a good world for families, and that's not a good world for women," she told the Wisconsin Examiner. So in these cases and so many more, the Dobbs decision repealing Roe v. Wade, which occurred 2 years ago this week, is very much going to be a factor. You could probably expect something of a question of that nature to come up on Thursday night as well, in the first of what are supposed to be two debates between President Biden and former President Donald Trump. Civic Media News Director and Midday host Todd Alba will anchor Civic Media's coverage of the 90-minute debate starting at 7:30 on Thursday evening. A Biden spokesman says Trump will finally have to answer in a fair forum for ripping away Americans' freedoms, promising billionaire donors tax cuts, and threatening democracy with promises to rule as a dictator if he wins, or violence if he loses. Hans Breitenmoser joins us next. You're up north. It was on this day 4 years ago the Dixie Chicks changed their name to the Chicks. Not long after, Lady Antebellum changed their name to Lady A, in both cases as part of a national reckoning with Black Americans' history and a desire to stop romanticizing labels and periods that weren't nearly in keeping with America's ongoing effort to make itself a more perfect union. It is 7:35 right now, a reminder that you can text and call your questions and comments to the same number, 855-75-CIVIC. Again, 855-75-CIVIC. Always feel free to use that Civic Media app, and we haven't given out the email address for some time. It is radio at upnorthnewswi.com. Again, radio at upnorthnewswi.com. Over at the website, upnorthnewswi.com, you can sign up for our newsletter. And this morning's newsletter includes a guide to Wisconsin beaches. Also, a discussion of algae blooms and things to watch out for, things that can make swimming yucky or unhealthy. So take a look at that. On the text line, we get a hello from Lynn Anaconomowoc, who is up in Sister Bay, and who writes, "A couple of years ago, Green Bay waters were covering up the swimming pier. Now the water level is so low that boaters are having propeller problems." She also notes her claim to fame is that her cousin, the late Susan Jeffers Castle, was on the J.K. Rowling's editing team, speaking of Harry Potter, and noted that they went into a skiff secure building to work. You know, again, one of those areas where you read like national security documents and things like that. But the author wanted to make sure that, you know, you brought nothing in and that you take nothing out. And obviously, since we just got done, you know, at an amusement park or a couple of amusement parks dedicated to Harry Potter, apparently something's done right there if you're controlling the process of what gets into your book. Hans Breitenmoser joins us, dairy farmer from up in Lincoln County. And as we always have on Tuesday mornings, we have the latest crop progress and condition reports from the USDA. Because of heavy rainfall, there were only 2.5 days suitable for field work on average across the state last week. The top soil moisture, none of it is short or very short, 53% adequate, 47% surplus. Corn planting is 96% complete. Soybean planting, 97% complete. Oat emergence is 93% complete. Winter wheat, 97% is headed. The cutting of alfalfa, though, is only 83% complete. That's 13 days behind last year. And Hans knows a thing or two about that because he, like so many people, he's been affected by the weather when it comes to getting seeds into the ground. Hans, good morning. What's your situation like up there near Merrill?
Good morning, Pat. Well, it rained again last night. It rained quite hard, actually. Thunder and lightning and all sorts of drama. So, yeah, we've got more soil moisture than we really need right now. And we do have about 117 acres of ground on our farm that still doesn't have any seed in it because of the excessive moisture and the inability to be able to get in the fields. You get these windows where you only got 2 days without any kind of rain, but that's not enough to dry the soil out enough to get out there and do some planting. So it's been I would argue, the most challenging year I've had weather-wise in my career as a farmer.
And yet, a year ago, we were talking about, you know, the threats of drought instead, the volatility that is involved in farming. When you look at those acres, I mean, do you have certain mental cutoff dates for your original plan for what you're going to plant there versus what you may plant instead, or just leave the field be?
For sure. I mean, typically, I've got a fairly decent plan in place in September, October of the, you know, of the year before, and then we try and execute that plan in spring. But this spring, we've had to change that plan a number of times, and now with the remaining acres, it's getting quite late to plant corn. Although since we're a dairy farm, we're not looking, we can plant those corn acres into silage corn, so it's not like we're living and dying by grain that needs to go to the elevator. So that gives us, I guess, a little bit larger window. But there are insurance implications and so forth as well. After a certain date, you can't insure those crops anymore and that type of stuff. So it does definitely it does have us sort of shooting from the hip a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, it's built into the job description, unfortunately.
Right.
And, you know, I bring it up not to remind you of what your challenge is like, but so that more people will appreciate what you've got going on over there, which includes, a lot of people. We've got people or animals looking to say hi to you this morning.
Yeah, my dog's right outside the window. She realized that I'm in my office
now. Again, very dog friendly show. That would be just fine. One of the things I wanted to ask you about this week deals with the continued detection of bird flu being found in dairy cattle. Now, none in Wisconsin yet, but as we've been seeing national stories about it, and I have to acknowledge that my wife, Sherry, who grew up on a dairy farm, brought it up first. And she was not one who, she was not in 4-H or anything like that, did not show cattle or anything at fairs. But she said, if I were doing that now, I wouldn't be doing it. I wouldn't be showing at fairs. And it made me immediately wonder, what is it going to be like at county fairs? What's it going to be like at the state fair? Heck, even what it's like in markets these days. And what you'll find is that whether it's, county fairs or petting zoos, you've got Wisconsin officials urging the public and everybody to protect against bird flu, basic stuff, washing your hands, look out for cross-contamination. But, Hans, from your point of view as a dairy farmer and seeing what's happening in neighboring states and around the country, is this, what do we think we're going to see by the end of 2024 in terms of, this concern about bird flu spreading to more dairy cattle and potentially infecting more than just the handful of humans so far?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just kind of one more thing that has to be on our radars as dairy farmers and as consumers and so forth. And I don't think it's, there's no point in panicking, but it's just one more thing that affects us. And, you talked about the fairs. From a economic standpoint, maybe that's not the biggest thing compared to, other things in ag, but it has an impact. And there's the social aspect of it too. If there's young people who are concerned or their folks are concerned about them taking animals to the fair because of biosecurity concerns. That does throw kind of a wet blanket on what should be a very fun and festive time of the year for young people at county fairs bringing their dairy animals. But there is some funding in place for testing. And my understanding is it's the lactating dairy cows that need to be tested. So if you have even a lactating beef cow or a non-lactating dairy cow, like a dry cow or heifer or something like that, those animals don't need to be tested, to the best of my knowledge. So there's ways to get around it, but it's another wrinkle that has to be dealt with, and it does, I think, discourage some folks because they're concerned about that biosecurity aspect for bringing something onto their own farm.
Without a doubt. And that's, again, some of the advice is that for folks who do show, at a county fair or whatnot, is to then when you come back, still keep them separated from the main herd for a certain quarantine period. We're talking about what's being described as a highly contagious H5N1 virus. Again, no confirmed cases in Wisconsin dairy cattle. There hasn't been a case seen in Wisconsin poultry since January. And again, we're not talking at the moment about something like COVID. The problem is in mutations, and that, you know, if you start letting things spread unchecked, that you may then see, I read in one article here, the concern that, let's say you've got a farm worker that contracts that H5N1 virus and also has an influenza virus. You know, they were already sick and then they contract that. You've got the, you know, a greater chance that those viruses are going to combine in a way or interact with each other in a way that gives you another strain. And now instead of, you know, farm workers getting essentially pink eye, is like the most serious thing that they get, but maybe a mild respiratory ailment becomes a more serious respiratory ailment. And so it really is like, okay, we're not, like you said, nobody should be panicking right now, but you also can't just say, oh, you know, it's the flu. We all get the flu. So, you know, what are you going to do? There is a reasonable middle ground in here for care and precaution, Hans.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, I think it should be taken serious because ultimately, I mean, we're talking about human health and human lives here. So I don't think we can be just, we need to take it seriously and respond appropriately. But one of the things I think, Pat, that should be talked about when we start discussing these things, once again, we get hung up on the symptoms, but we need to think about where the things started, right? And these avian flu things are starting in very, very large poultry barns. And to add sort of insult to injury, it's tax dollars that go to help these big poultry barns that are vertically integrated and, you know, owned by the Tyson Foods of the world to help them destroy these chickens and these turkeys and these broiler chickens. Those are tax dollars. Hundreds of millions of tax dollars are going to, you know, help bail these guys out, when maybe part of the response should be, okay, let's just not allow hundreds of thousands of birds on a single operation, so that operation doesn't have as huge of impact on the supply chain, and it also doesn't need the millions and millions of dollars that it takes to clean out and repopulate those facilities. That's something that I think policymakers should be interested in, because it speaks to the human health aspect. It seems to the, you know, cattle health and, you know, all the other species health, but it also speaks to just simple dollars and cents and what tax dollars are going to be spent on.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, this comes back to the whole COVID discussion of realizing that once you had the workforce in our meatpacking plants getting sick and dying, I think that's what really brought it home to people that there are four companies that control so much of the meat production in this country, and they have these mega plants, and so, you know, you can't really diversify. So what you need to do is to look for ways to diversify. You've looked for ways to encourage more small local producers of meat products, and now you look at, again, the whole poultry situation and say, have we again, have we gotten things too big? It's kind of like, you know, it's the old too big to fail thing. It doesn't matter if you're talking about banks or airlines or meatpacking and poultry. This whole notion of everything bigger must be better, we have clearly found out that is not necessarily the case.
No, it's not at all. And when you look at the size and scale of things, these things get scaled up to that size for efficiency purposes. And as a farmer and as any, you know, business person understands, there's economies of scale. There's efficiencies that go along with things when you can duplicate them at a larger scale. But who benefits from that efficiency, right? It's the owner of that business. And in this case, these are very big companies who are vertically integrated. Their efficiency is not necessarily helping the consumers in terms of food safety. And it historically, hasn't helped necessarily the cost that people pay at the grocery store ultimately. So who's getting the benefit? It's the companies, and they're getting the tax, they're getting the benefit of tax dollars helping them out when, even though they're too big to fail, they fail.
Yeah, the benefit of too big to fail goes with the corporate profits, not necessarily for the consumer. Tony notes as well on YouTube that the same thing goes with microchips. It's better to decentralize. It's what's leading to a new factory in Ohio rather than China, and that in all of these cases, you have companies that are taking that savings not to make things safer necessarily or to improve efficiencies, but to buy back stock. And to increase executive pay and things like that. So, you know, this whole thing is simply to say that we need to be mindful that just because something has more lobbying power on Capitol Hill does not necessarily make it the best for the consumer, best for the environment, best for the employee, and certainly for public health as well, which is what people need to keep in mind as we continue watching the transmission of avian flu into dairy cattle. And again, if you're going to a county fair or petting zoo or something this summer, again, basic precautions will get you through all this. Hans Breitenmoser, thanks as always. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week, and then we'll give you a little break for the summer here.
Sounds good. Thanks, Pat.
All right, Hans. Have a great day. Please let the puppy in. The puppy's been waiting for so long. All right, back with more after this. You're up north. Again, Michael Jackson passed away at the age of 50 on this day in 2009. And again, so many things can be said about his later life, but I thought we'd play something from the early years to remember somebody who had been a generational talent, but like so many other child stars, life had a way of really, shall we just say, complicating things and leaving it at that. If I'm not mistaken, Greg Bach is here. I'm here. Chad Holmes is not here. Chad would normally be here on Tuesdays, but as I'm looking at his social media posts, apparently, and he may have told me this, but in planning for my own Orlando getaway last weekend, I may have forgotten, but Chad Holmes was very busy with a World Series of Poker tournament over the weekend, and I believe he's got another one starting today, because I see a note here that he's got a guest host this week, Bob Look. So I believe Chad is once again trying to qualify for a World Series of Poker play. And
I never knew that. I was like, is he just watching? Is he commentating?
No.
Is he a commentator? Is he like,
yeah. Like, no. I remember it was like a year ago that I had the same reaction you did. I'm looking, just at his social media feed, say, I wonder who his guest is going to be. And it's like, as a matter of fact, I'll even look up a couple of these posts because it's a whole different language, like, of course, any sport is. And you hear a few terms here and there, but it's not until you've actually got, somebody who is competing in all of this. And he says, I got my last 11,900 in with pocket eights, but ran into pocket jacks. Made a couple of mistakes in the last hour. Kept on grinding until the end. Not done either. I have another World Series of Poker event Tuesday, and hopefully we'll get a few more playable hands. The post prior to that is chased a nut flush draw on the final hand before the break and didn't get there. Made one great call that kept me in. Need to get a heater soon as the blinds and antes keep moving up. I'm like, need to get a heater? That's like old-timey talk for a cigarette. I don't think that's what he's saying, though.
Are we going to get fined by the FCC? I mean, all that sounds nasty.
I know, but it's not. It's Chad who's going to tell us next week, hopefully, unless he said, I mean, he notes here that last year's winner finished with 260 million in chips or something like that. Does that sound right?
I don't know. Yes,
I don't
sure.
know.
Yeah. Yeah. 20, yeah, yeah, yeah. 20 gabillion dollars.
But I recall asking him about it last year. I said, why do you do this? And he said, it's something that you know, like so many other things, you don't expect that you're going to let you try something. You like it. You determine that you're not terrible at it. And so you want to keep at it. And for some people, that's golf. And for some people, that's, you know, hunting. And for him, it's the World Series of Poker. So good on him, but boy, that's a level of pressure I would just as soon not have to deal with. Thank you very much.
I agree completely. My mom is a really, really good poker player. She's been playing all her life, but she does the thing where she plays poker with her cousins or her friends, and the big, you know, ooh, did you win? Yeah, I won $3.50 last night.
Yes.
Ooh.
Well, that for me would be, she said, now Sherry and I play cribbage, you know, regularly, a couple of times a week at least. It's just our favorite thing, but it's not a competitive gambling type thing. But, you know, Sheep's Head was and is the game that her family played and played for hours and hours on Sunday afternoons after dinner had been cleared. And of course, you know, it's all nothing but nickels and dimes there. And so I'd be in the other room, you know, watching football or something, and I'd come in when it finally broke up. Well, how'd you do? Oh, I lost 35 cents. Oh, my gosh, you're going to need a second job.
How are we going to afford a stamp?
Well, that for 35 cents, you're not anymore. That's the kind of life we're living in these days. But I don't remember if I told you this or not, but I know I've told the listeners once or twice that I tried for 10 to 15 years. Now, Sherry and I have been together for 40 years now, and I tried for the first 10 or 15 to kind of learn the rules and kind of pay attention. And then two of my nieces were, I'm not sure of the age, I'm going to say 9 and 11, and I sat in for a hand or two, and they were snickering at me. They were mocking, because they do a little bit of trash talk around the table, like, oh, I can't believe you mowered on that, you know, or whatever. And I just said, that's it, I'm out. A 9 and 11 year old are mocking me. I am not playing this game anymore. And I did not play for a good 10 plus years. And you know what got me back into playing Sheep's Head and actually doing okay now?
What's that?
An app. Somebody invented an app.
I wanted to learn how to play. I think the game is, I'm not sure exactly, it's a gin rummy app. I've always been fascinated by gin and gin rummy, and I'm like, well, mm-hmm. Because that's how I kind of keep my skills sharp on cribbage, is by playing an app. So I just remember how to count, because
yep.
I don't want to lose that skill, but I don't play enough, but I really like the game. So I just use apps to learn or keep fresh.
Yeah. And the other one that we're kind of getting into more recently is on my side of the family, my mom and sisters have really fallen in love with a game called Rummikube. And it's kind of a gin rummy type of thing. And, you know, we'd play occasionally. It's got these tiles that are almost like dice, and they're involved runs and straights and colors and things. Well, then we found an app for it. And that's the, so occasionally while the Brewers game is on, you know, I'm painting such a Ma and Pa picture now, but Ma and Pa are sitting in their respective recliners, and we were either running Words with Friends, you know, Scrabble words to each other, or Rummikube. And at some point we were like, hey, how if we actually go get a deck of cards and go play cribbage in the other room? And we'll do that as well. But yeah, there's an app for almost every game now as well.
10 years ago, I was addicted to a game called Draw Something, which was like Words with Friends, but you drew a picture and they had to guess it. And it was very, yeah, I had to stop playing that.
What was the game show they made out of it? Like Win, Lose, or Draw?
That was before the fact. That's an old game show like that. And then there's Pictionary. And yeah, mm-hmm. Anything can be a game show now.
Anything can be a game show. Anything can be an app. And to close the show where I started with being on the Orlando trip, you need the Universal app to get anything done at Universal Studios. You need the Disney app. You need the Swan and Dolphin Resort app in order to order food just the right way. there had to be a half a dozen different apps that you needed just to keep up with things, as opposed to just, you know, aimlessly wandering the parks. Like, no, if you want to be efficient, you got to get the app and you got to get things just right. So, having said that, the Civic Media app is available. Head over to wherever you get your apps and download the Civic Media app. Head to civicmedia.us to learn more, where you can call us. You can text us from the app as well. We would love to hear all about what you've got to say, but you should use the app. Mr. Bach will be back for Matt and Air on Air, I believe. That didn't change, right? Still doing that 10 to noon?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, you be looking for that while you get that app and then get set to join us. There is no Up North News app yet. I got to get to work on that. In the meantime, find us old school, upnorthnewswi.com. Thanks for following along on this beautiful Tuesday morning. Have a great day. We'll see you back here tomorrow morning, 6 a.m.